Good morning. It's good to be here this morning, and it's good to see the crowd that we've got. It's a wonderful day, and I'm glad to be here. The lesson that I have been given this morning is to talk about marriage, to talk about a scriptural marriage, and I have added some basic keys that I think will help us in a strong and a happy marriage and protect our children. The text will come from the 10th chapter of Mark, verses 6 through 9. It said, "But from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh, so then that they are no more twain but one flesh. For whatever God hath joined together, let not man put aside." Divorce has reached epidemic stages in the United States, and it's happened in the last just over 100 years. In the year 1900, one of every 100 marriages, 1% ended in divorce. In 1960, before the sexual revolution began in our country, it was 14%, 14 in 100. By 1987, half of the marriages ended in divorce, and it has got even worse since 1987. The average duration of a marriage is 7 years without a divorce. And once divorced, statistically, people are more likely to divorce again. Statistics further state that death rates are higher for divorced people than for married people, and this is at every age level. And more than 1 million children each year are affected by divorce. Margaret Mead, an anthropologist, wrote a book called Too Many Divorces Too Soon. And I want to read to you what Margaret said, because it pretty well sets the theme. It said, "In our generation, divorce has become a part of the American way of life. We no longer deeply believe that two people who have made the choice to marry should necessarily try to weather the storms that shake any vital, intimate relationship. Instead, more and more, our answers to difficulty in marriage is to try it again with another partner." Who gets divorced? Again, statistically, it's common more among urban couples than it is among rural couples. It is common amongst those that marry young. It's common amongst those that have only a short and a shallow acquaintance. Another important factor, when relatives and friends disapprove of the marriage, it is more likely to fail. And because of the Women's Lib movement in our country in several years, marriage is more likely to end in divorce when the woman is capable and able to take care of herself. There is a motivation for changing partners because people, according to Margaret Mead, have become very selfish. It's this me-first attitude. Do things my way, meet my standards. And if both the husband and the wife have this type of attitude, then the marriage is most likely to fail. Sadly, again statistically, the greatest threat to marriage is God's greatest gift to us as married people, and that is our children. And again, I'm going to continue to read from Margaret Mead's book. She says, "Unprepared for parenthood, two young people who have become very close may see the new baby as an interloper, or if they are already restless, the baby may become just more and more obstacle to pleasure and freedom. The mother is permanently stuck at home. The father is almost equally confined or goes out alone. There is no money now for pleasure, and almost nowhere where the young couple can go for amusement with the baby. Then our current relief that a speedy divorce is the way out of the dilemma begins to take effect, each accusing the other of things that they both fear and long for, these being freedom from responsibility, a chance to get away, longing for better opportunities in life, and a way out of their unhealthy situation." Divorces hurt. It has been said that divorce hurts more than a death. And when there are children involved, and there are millions that are involved each and every year, the children suffer the most. Not all divorces, not all marriages end in divorces. Many marriages end with a couple sharing a house and the children, but without a real home and without a real marriage. And it statistically shows that children suffer just about as much from that as when the parents actually separate. Our lesson this morning is to look at this from God's viewpoint, by God's teachings, and to look at this as for the implications for the church, for the implications for a healthy life, and for implications for the eternity of men. We need to be in the business today of teaching young people how to marry and who to marry. We need to be in the business this morning of teaching and helping young people save their marriages. And instead, we seem to spend a lot of our time worrying about the pros and the cons of various interpretation of controversial passages. And while we get lost in the debate, our young and others continue to divorce and remarry. This is a very tough lesson for me. I would never, ever have taken this lesson on my own. And I can tell you right now, Terry's got more years of marriage than I do, and Paul's got almost, and I'd rather each one of them be up here giving this lesson than me. Now, my marriage lasted 45 years, but I'm here to tell you, it's lasted that long, not because of me, but in spite of me. Because my wife has been the one that's made the marriage last. This is tough. And I'm not here this morning to pass judgment on anybody, and I'm not here to embarrass anybody, because each and every one of us have different situations that we have to live with, and we are all responsible for our own salvation, and we all need to ask God to forgive us for the mistakes that we have made in the past, and we need to move forward from that point. So I'm not here to pass judgment on anyone, because we all have to live with our decisions, myself included. But I do want to give you God's plan. I do want to tell you what God said as the Creator about what marriage is, about what it should be, what He wanted it to be, and how we can all live healthy, happy lives together, have a good life with our husband and our wife, and also raise our children. And I just happened to glance at the calendar as I walked back. This is the 14th of February. This is Valentine's Day. And I'm talking about the greatest love that we know here upon earth. I'm surprised I realize that until sometime tomorrow. But we're going to talk about marriage a little bit today, and this is a very difficult subject. It's a very serious subject. I'm speaking to the young. I'm speaking to those that are not married. I'm speaking to those that are married, because this is a very serious thing, and we need to understand what God thought about marriage. Marriage is a divinely restricted relationship. God is the one that set the conditions on who was eligible to marry. The Bible tells us that one who has never been married, but is physically and mentally capable, can be married if their partner is also physically and mentally capable for marriage. The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians 7:39, if an individual has been married and they lose their spouse to death, that they can be remarried. But there's a caveat. It said they marry only in the faith. Matthew 19:9 is one of the most controversial verses in the Bible, and it says that one who has been married but whose spouse has been put away because of fornication on the part of the companion is able to be married. Now, I'm going to tell you, my daddy and I have had some very lively discussions about this, and we did when he was alive. My daddy believed in no exception. He believed that when someone was married, that they were married for life, and death only was able to break this bond. I happen to believe in the exception. And we had a lot of discussions. And this has been discussed all over our brotherhood for years and years. It has been very destructive. And my daddy and I finally came to the decision that we're going to have to agree to disagree on this item, because neither one of us is going to win this argument. God intended and still intends that one husband be joined to one wife for life. That's the plan of God. One man, one woman, forever. He did not make two wives for Adam. He did not make two husbands for Eve. He did not make Adam and Steve. He made Adam and Eve. He did not make two men and expect them to marry, because this is not marriage. He did not make Eve and another woman and expect these two women to live together in marriage. Marriage, by definition, is one man and one woman. And you can call a potato a marriage all day long, but you're not going to change the fact that a potato and a marriage are two opposite things, and you are not going to change the will of God when He said marriage is between a man and a woman, and two men or two women do not a marriage constitute or make. For this cause, because of the maleness of one and the femaleness of the other, is a death blow to homosexuals. And I'm going to tell you, we are different. Vicki and I raised three boys. It was all testosterone in my house. There was very little estrogen. And I didn't have any idea what this was about until Alaron Elizabeth was born. And it was not but just a very short time after this girl was born, I realized she's totally different than my boys. She's totally different than Drew. She's an entirely different person. And I love the femininity. I love the femaleness of women. That is what attracts women to us. First time I watched her play basketball, and I noticed all these little wall girls, some brunette, some blonde, but they would run down the court and that little old ponytail bouncing in the back. They all had long hair. And I told Vicki, I said, that must be the first thing they teach those girls. And I said, no, they didn't teach them that. That's genetics. That's instinct. That's a woman. That's a girl. And I love that about my girl. But we're different. And I say that to make that point. We, men and women, are different. There's 180 degrees difference between us. And this is the way God created us. And he did us this way for a purpose. And he said that man will join woman together, that this union takes priority over parental loyalties, that this union is for life. And he said second marriages are adulterous. This is God's general rule for marriage, and this is Jesus Christ speaking. He said, what therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. That's Matthew 19:6. Now the Apostle Paul said, unto the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. I agree with you, Paul. I agree with you this. These are not my words today, and I'm not talking from me. I'm telling you the words of the Bible, and that's exactly what Paul did. Paul said, I'm going to give you a truth here. He said, this ain't me talking. Don't kill the messenger. I'm just telling you what God said. Paul said, and to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from the husband. But if she depart, let her remain unmarried or to be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his right. 1 Corinthians 7:10-11. And that's what we're going to preach on this morning, and that's what we're going to emphasize. We're going to talk about God's plan, scriptural plan for marriage. And we're going to do what we can in this congregation and in our little sphere of influence to stop this epidemic of divorces that is destroying our country and destroying our families. A marriage is a covenant. You can go back to Malachi 2:14, and the Bible says, yet she is thy companion and the wife of thy covenant. Marriage is something that is established by covenant. It is a covenant that involves terms, promises, and ratification. The covenant involves promises to love and to remain faithful. The covenant is ratified when whatever standard of law that the community enforces is made. Whatever the community says establishes marriage, that is the covenant that must be met to make this marriage legal and to ratify it in the eyes of God. Marriage involves a man and a woman who have entered into this covenant relation. But here's a real important point. We are free agents. And we can marry who we want, when we want, like we want, and as many times we want. But a marriage is a covenant that God recognizes and establishes whether he agrees with the marriage or whether he does not. Marriage is ordained and regulated by God. Genesis 2:24-25, after God presented the woman unto the man, he said, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh, and they were both naked, and they were not ashamed. Jesus, in Matthew 19:4-6, reemphasized God's plans for marriage since the very beginning of time. And he said unto them, have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall twain be one flesh. Wherefore they are no longer twain, but one flesh, no longer two, but one. What therefore God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Now these are serious words. And these are important words. And these are words that we need to understand. And these are words that our youth needs to understand. So I'm going to give you a couple of basic concepts here to kind of help you with this, to help me with this, and to help us realize really what this is about. And I believe if we would kind of look at these seven concepts and take them into account, that it may help us to be the people that God expects and wants us to be. Follow God's instructions in the Bible. That's number one. God created us. God created God created marriage. God set the rules. God made us man and woman. He made us different, and he said that we should join together forsaking parents and become as one. It's God that set the restrictions, and it's God that made the rules. Now, there's one question that I've heard all my life, and I looked it up. Does God allow interracial marriages? You know, there's not one word in the Bible against interracial marriages. God doesn't tell us we can't marry against across races. There's absolutely nothing wrong. I've got a real good friend. I talked to her last week. Her daddy had just died in Connecticut. I asked her if she was going up. She said, no, I'm not going. I'm not going. Said, my mom and dad and I, we broke apart a long time ago. When I married outside of my race, they completely cut me off. So he said, no, I won't be going up there. We have no relationship. You know, that's not God's law. That's hers. That's the parent. Because God did not list any restrictions against marrying across races. God thought up and instituted marriage, and marriages fail when people try to use their own rules instead of using the rules of God. And that's when homes break and lives shattered and children become shattered and divided. Children get bruises, and the dreams that brides and grooms have had on the day of their marriage become nightmares. We cannot ignore the Bible and the teachings of the Bible. Let me give you some more statistics. Now, these came off the internet, off of a Baptist website, and it's a Baptist survey. So I'm not going to sit here and say that they are set in concrete. But I am going to tell you the statistics off of this Baptist survey. I did not find anything else to reconfirm it, so I'm just giving it to you like I got it. When a family regularly attends church together, divorce rate drops to 1 in 52%. When both parents have obeyed the gospel plan and faithfully follow God's guidelines for life and marriage, the divorce rate is 1 in 1,525. I did not confirm that, but that's exactly what the survey showed. And it went on to say that therefore a godly Christian family, husband and wife, have 700 times a better chance of success in marriage than the unbeliever because they follow the instructions of God that are laid out in the Holy Testament. Obey God's plan. Get rid of your old life. Get rid of your old sins. Get rid of the things that you have learned and done in the past. And make the decision right now to follow God in the future to do what God says. And your chances are a whole lot better. It's a new way of life. It's a new way of doing things God's way. Commit yourself to doing what is right. Read the Bible. Pray. Pray with your partner. Pray with your family and be active in things. If a family does things together, they're less likely to separate, and the chances of a successful marriage increase. Number two, reaffirm your marriage as a permanent commitment and reaffirm it as an unbreakable union. Now, when you got married, you promised, for better or worse, till death do us part. Now, this is a vow that we made in this marriage covenant, one with another, and it's Bible-based. It's not just simply a ritual, and it's not just something that people say. Because Jesus said in Matthew 19:6 that whatever God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. And these are very serious words. Many people take their commitments very lightly, and many marriages break up because of silly, immature, selfish type reasons. If you want a stable marriage, commit yourself today. Reaffirm your commitment to your spouse, and then tell your children. Tell your children that you are committed to make this marriage work, that it will not end, and that it will last. And let these children know that this stability is in their home so that they can carry this, because most of their classmates are living in a divorce or a divorce happening or with separations. Make a commitment to your wife and give, or to your spouse, and then make this commitment to your children and give them a foundation that not only a marriage can survive on, but they also can survive on when they get old enough to marry. And now I want to debunk a very popular myth. This is number three. Marriage is not a 50-50 proposition. It never has been. It's not God's plan that marriage be 50-50. Because the logic of a 50-50 proposition is that if you will do your part, I will do my part. And that's not the way marriages work. It's tragedy, because in every marriage, somewhere along the line, both partners make mistakes. Both partners fail. Both partners, instead of giving 50%, give 0%. Every marriage, every partner fails in this aspect, and a 50-50 rule will not work. The rule that God gives is 100, 100. In Ephesians 5, 18 through 33, he sets out the different instructions and responsibilities for a man and woman. If we give 100% of our commitment to making a marriage work, even if our partner is giving zero, that home's probably not going to break up. And it gives this partner that's giving zero the time to realize, and with the actions and the attitude of their spouse, to realize that they need to pull themselves in and start doing what is right. Marriage is a 100%, 100%. It is not 50-50. It's not 80-20. But it's when both partners are willing to give everything they have to make a marriage work. Ephesians 5, 18 through 32, 3 is a very interesting passage. And Paul in this is speaking to the Ephesians to explain what marriage is as God has told them. It says in Ephesians 5 and 22, speaking to the wife, "Wife, submit yourself to your own husbands as unto the Lord." Now this is a very serious commandment. "Wives, submit yourself to your husband even as unto the Lord." The husband is spoken to in Ephesians 5 and 23, where the husband is referred to as the head of the house. That is his God-given right, is his God-given responsibility, that he be the head of the house. But this does not mean by being head of the house that that makes his wife inferior in any way, because they are equal. 1 Corinthians 11 and 3 said the head of Christ is God. "But yet we know that Christ took on the form of a man and came to this earth and made himself inferior to God so that he might please God. It did not take away that equality which Christ and God held." He did not make himself inferior. He simply did what God told him to do, to let God be his head. And in submitting to the Father, he did not become inferior. Submission is not a mark of inferiority. Wives are to submit themselves to their husband because this is right. This is what God says. It does not mean that she is not equal to that husband, because submission is not a sign of inferiority. And then he goes on a little further and speaks to the husband. This is one of the strongest set of verses in the entire Bible. It says, "Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Is he saying that since God, Christ, so loved the church that he gave his life for it, that we as husbands are to love our wives to the point that we would give our lives for? I believe that's exactly what it says. "Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it." In Romans 5 and 8, it said, "God commanded his love toward us, in fact, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." That's not a position of superiority when you are told to love your wife to the point that you would die for. And that type of love is not showing inferiority or superiority, but is showing equality. That is the teaching of Almighty God. We need to recognize that every person has distinctive personal needs, and this is especially true in a relationship. And these needs, physically and emotionally, must be taken care of. They must be dealt with in the marriage relationship. Because if we step out of the marriage relationship to satisfy needs, physical or emotional, then you've got a real, real problem. And that's one of the biggest reasons for the marriage breakups today, is because someone from outside of the marriage begins to provide this emotional or physical support that an individual needs, and this spouse is just quite naturally drawn to the outsider, and then comes divorce, and people get caught up in this trap and don't even realize it. You know, it's a little difficult when you live with someone and the kids are sick and the house payments due and the car's breaking down and you've got all of these many problems that you deal with 24/7. You know, it might be easy to step outside of the marriage and find someone and it's just all love and peace and kindness and patting on the back. You don't have to deal with that you have to deal with at the home. So this outsider can influence an individual, and this is what causes the breakup. We need to keep all emotional needs of husband and wife within that bound and within those bonds of marriage. You don't want to dilute this marriage and take it outside. Ephesians 5:33, the Bible says, "Let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and see that the wife reverence the husband." So what's he saying here? He's saying that men and women are different. Women need love. They need to be shown love. They need to be taken care of. They need to receive these little gifts occasionally that shows that we care for them. They need security. They need protection. They need a home. I like the way Judge Judy says it. She says it best. She said, women are nesters. They've got to have a nest. They've got to have a place to build their home so that they can raise their children with security and peace and happiness. Women are nesters. Men are not. Men need respect. Men need some reverence. Men need to realize that they are taking on a great responsibility that God has given them, and that the responsibility is serious. They're taking care of their family, and they expect that woman to understand that and appreciate it, and just every now and then might even tell him so. To be assured of the respect, to know that the wife is dependent upon him, even as the church is dependent upon the church. And when the husband and wife do not recognize the needs of their partners, then we got problems that are coming. And we can't go outside of marriage to get what we need in our emotional and our physical needs, because then we're diluting the marriage. These needs are deep. These needs are real. These needs are deeply felt. And we need to realize our needs and then realize the needs of our spouse, because they're just as important and they're just as powerful. There's a verse that says, if we give love, we will get love. If we give help, we will get help. If we give encouragement, we will get encouragement. Forgiveness, forgiveness. Smile, a smile. And then it ends, if we give hate, we will get hate. We need to meet the needs of our spouse. And we don't need anyone else helping us meet the needs of our spouse. And if we will do this, then the relationship will bloom and it will grow as God wanted it. And problems that brought division will now bring husbands and wives closer together. The physical relationship becomes more fulfilling. The home is more stable. The children are more stable. And marriage is what God expected it to be. Resolve differences God's way. This is item number 6, and this is very, very important. Successful marriages are not easy. They require a tremendous amount of work. They require patience. It requires a lot of different things to make a marriage work. Successful marriages are not easy. God forbids divorce and remarriage, and on the Sermon on the Mount, this is the Savior himself that he speaks. It has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. Why did he say that? It's because the question was asked, Moses allowed us to divorce our wives, are you saying the same? And Jesus said, yes, Moses did allow you to divorce your wife because of the hardness of your heart. He allowed the divorcement. So Jesus continues, it has been said, whoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, sorry daddy, but here we are again, causing her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her is divorced committeth adultery. This is very serious, that we understand God's laws and rules and interpretations, and that we follow them, and that we believe them. Long before a divorce causes this putting away, this separation, there is a putting away in the marriage. This putting away is a lack of companionship. It's a lack of communication. It's a lack of oneness. And when an individual, one member of a marriage has to go outside to get companionship or conversation or oneness or attention or respect, and this has to be fulfilled by someone outside, then there is a put down of the marriage, and the marriage has been diluted. Because one partner then is hurt and forced to go outside. The other partner then is hurt because the one went outside. Then the one that hurt starts building up these walls to protect themselves. And the one that was hurt builds up walls to protect themselves. And even if divorce does not result, if this marriage continues in such a way, the relationship becomes stiff and cold and formal without the real love and the communication that God expected. The partners no longer meet one another's needs, and the marriage begins to die long before the divorce is given. What is the solution to the problem? You know, God didn't give us any problems, but he didn't give us a solution. And he gave us a solution to this one. God realized that if you put two people together anywhere in the world, in any relationship, under any circumstance, that you're going to have problems between the two. It's just human nature. And God realized that when he put a man and a woman together in a marriage, that there were going to be problems. And someone's going to say something or do something. Somebody was going to do something wrong. There's going to be problems. So he gave us a way to solve this. And he did it in Matthew, the 18th chapter and the 15th verse. This is one of two instances in Matthew when it is spoken to how to solve a problem that you have. Jesus said, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. And if he shall hear thee, thou hast gained a brother. You got a problem with your spouse? You got a problem with your brother? You got a problem with someone you work with? You got a problem with anybody in the world? How does the Bible say to take care of it? You go to that individual. And you say, here is what you have done. You've done something to me that's offended me. You have hurt me. Here is what you have done. And give that individual the opportunity to admit it or to deny it, to explain it, to ask for forgiveness. Give that individual the opportunity to make right on his wrong. And he says, the same thing can be done in a marriage. We're all going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And when we make a mistake and we sense that our spouse may be offended, or if we know our spouse is offended, we need to go to our spouse and say, this is how I feel. This is what you have done. Or go to our spouse and say, you know, this is something I've done, and I want to get this straightened up. Get this to the light of day. Talk about it and settle the problem. Going to the person who is offended with a proper attitude is the key to resolving differences. Ephesians 4:32 said, we are told to forgive one another as he forgives us. This is in the world, with our co-workers, with our family. It's also true with our wife. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. We have the same obligation to our spouse. If we feel we've been wrong, or if we have wronged, you need to go talk to that person and get that straightened out, and get it straightened out right now. Forgiveness is mandatory. Forgiveness is essential. And this is what we have to do if we are going to be pleasing to God. And once forgiveness is made, then you've got a brand new foundation that you begin to build on to restore the communion, to restore the openness, to restore the intimacy, to restore the things in marriage that have been missing. But when both partners build these walls and put down the other or begin to ruin the marriage without forgiveness, demanding forgiveness and accepting the wrongs for the things that we have done, there's two things that can happen. One is, the house turns into an armed camp where there's going to be some open battles. That's number one. Or then it's going to become very distant, very formal, with no closeness and no love and no intimacy. That's one case. The other case is divorce. We've got to avoid this tragedy, because partners should really commit themselves to resolving differences in God's ways rather than just pushing them under the covers, pushing them under the rugs, and letting them fester and grow to the point that they cannot be solved. The last thing, and then I'll shut up, is trust one another completely. A stable marriage must be based upon trust. A person can be trusted only as he can trust the other one. There must be trust to forgive. So trust is an important part of forgiveness. And the trust must go where the other person is faithful. That's what keeps things together. Put list on this side. Trust, love, intimacy, commitment. Family, all of the many different things that we can list. And then get on the other side and list the opposites of that. Jealousy, suspicion, protective walls, coldness, formalness, no intimacy. And it doesn't take just a little bit to understand this trust and this love, and the way God has established this is far better than this on the other side that results in hatred, or that results in divorces, that results in all of the many different things. Husbands must be able to trust their wives. God says in Proverbs 31:10-11, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of the husband does safely trust in her. We've got to trust our wives. We've just got to have the trust in our wives before we can do what we need to do. In Ephesians 5:22, wives, submit yourselves to your husband as unto the Lord. Wives are not going to be able to submit themselves if they don't have that trust of their spouse. So trust is important. Trusting God is a result of what we act upon. So in conclusion, a successful marriage is never easy. They've never been easy. And people that have stayed married a long time have had a lot of fights. There's been a lot of things. There's been a lot of discussions that have gone on beneath the scenes that you may not know about. But they're never, ever easy. It's hard work. It requires forgiveness. It requires patience. And it requires commitment. So, if we are to have good marriages, if our youth are to marry well and to marry right and to live as God expects them to do, they need to read God's plan for marriage, which is the Bible. They need to faithfully follow the practice. They need to be involved in church. They need to bring their kids to church. Both the husband and the wife need to be members of the church. And by using this, they can build a stable, secure home which cannot be destroyed. Marriage and the home are the foundation stones of God's creation. And divorce destroys the handiwork of God. Forgive me if I have hurt you. Forgive me if I have embarrassed you. Forgive me if I have been judgmental. I did not mean to. As the Apostle Paul, it's not me speaking. I've tried to speak with Scripture and with verse. But this is such an important subject. And it's become such an epidemic in our country. We can no longer stick our heads in the sand and ignore this. We need to face it head on. Children, know what marriage is before you get into it, because it is the most fundamental part of the creation of God. Thank you for your time. That concludes. If there's anyone in the congregation that needs the help of the church, we ask you to come forward as we sing the song of invitation.